Radio Prague News.
The regional court in Brno has rejected a complaint from Cardinal Dominik Duka over two controversial theatre plays. A former member of the country's unit for fighting organised crime has been charged in connection with information leaks from the force. And the Czech version of Wikipedia will be inaccessible on Thursday as its editors are going on a one-day strike against the EU copyright reform. The regional court in Brno has rejected a complaint by the head of the Czech Roman Catholic Church, Cardinal Dominik Duka, regarding two theatre plays staged in Brno in May of last year. The plays Our Violence, Your Violence and The Curse, directed by Oliver Frljić from Croatia, included a scene in which Jesus rapes a Muslim woman, sparking protests from some of the locals who forced their way on stage and tried to stop the performance. Cardinal Duka filed a lawsuit against the theatre on the grounds that the plays were an attack on his rights guaranteed by the Charter of Fundamental Rights, such as the right to freedom of religion and the right to dignity and honour. The judge said the scenes were allegorical and could not be seen as violating individuals' rights. A former member of the country's unit for fighting organised crime, Luděk Vokál, has been charged in connection with information leaks from the force during his time in service. The former detective is suspected of having leaked information from a number of open cases to members of the underworld. The leaks occurred between 2010 and 2015. The police were severely criticised for the leaks at the time. The Czech version of Wikipedia will be inaccessible on Thursday since its editors are going on a one-day strike against the EU copyright reform. They claim the proposed new norms will restrict their right to cite sources and thus reduce the quality of the encyclopedia. After 2 years of heated debate, the European Parliament is expected to vote on the proposed copyright reform at the end of March. Wikipedia has shut down its pages in several countries in protest at the plans. The number of charging stations for electric vehicles is not growing fast enough to meet future demand, according to the Association of Automobile Producers. The head of the association, Bohdan Vojnar, says that at the present pace of construction, in 2025 there will be a lack of 3,000 electric charging stations in the country, and 5 years later a lack of 20,000 such stations. According to a study compiled by Boston Consulting Group, the number of electric-powered vehicles will grow by 50% by 2025 as a result of the strict new emission norms set down by the European Union. And the Czech Republic has the highest number of vacancies in the European Union, according to Eurostat data published today. In the fourth quarter of 2018, the ratio of vacancies to the overall number of jobs in the EU rose from 2.2 to 0.3% in the EU. In the Czech Republic, it rose by 0.1 percentage point to 6%, the highest figure in the European Union. Second in line was Belgium and Germany with 3.4%, followed by Austria with 3.1%. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should be clear to partly cloudy, mostly dry around the country, with day temperatures between 5 and 9 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's program, Czech intelligence have uncovered Russian hackers operating under the cover of two private IT companies, the weekly Respekt has reported. Czech travel agencies note a rise in senior clientele seeking exotic destinations. We have a roundup of the latest Czech sports news, and later we meet Josef Balaš. He's one of the most important Czechs in New York and does construction projects for major celebrities. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Respekt has just published a story which provides more detail on a recent successful intelligence operation carried out by country's BIS Counterintelligence Service, an agency that has been criticized for incompetence by President Miloš Zeman. The weekly says that BIS shut down a group of Russian hackers who were part of a wider international network in early 2018. Tom McEncrow has the details.
A few months ago, President Miloš Zeman attacked the Security Information Service Service, also known as BIS, saying that the Czech counterintelligence agency was incompetent and had not revealed a single Russian or Chinese spy in 6 years. This caused a reaction not just from the media but from BIS itself. Its chief, Michal Koudelka, said via the agency's website that BIS had stopped the activity of tens of Russian and Chinese intelligence officers, providing the destruction of a Russian intelligence network on Czech soil as an example. However, BIS refused to comment further and provided no details. Now, the Czech weekly magazine Respekt claims to have some information about what took place after conducting its own long-term investigation across the Czech Republic and Russia. The author of the story, journalist Ondřej Kundra, who specializes in intelligence affairs, says that it seems the group operating in the Czech Republic was part of a wider international cell which coordinated its attacks.
We still don't have all information on this topic, but our information and our sources are telling us that this was really a kind of international network that in a couple of countries, some of them were the European Union countries, were based a similar group of Russian spies who did some kind of cooperation together on which specific operation they were working, because they were focusing on hacking, we don't know.
According to Respekt, the group operated under the cover of two private IT companies, conducting hacking operations from the company's computers. These, the magazine's sources claim, were transported to the Czech Republic by vehicles under Russian diplomatic cover. Mr. Kundra says that the Russian spy ring also included Russians who had acquired Czech citizenship.
We don't know how many of them were involved, but we definitely know that some of them were involved in this spying group. Originally, all of them were Russian citizens who came to Czech Republic maybe a couple of years, maybe many years ago. That's also we don't know. And they got citizenship of this country, which, as we can see now, was a security threat, because after that they did the spying, which perhaps was easier for them to do that as for the Czech citizens.
This also makes the matter more complicated, says Mr. Kundra, because the Czech police cannot simply expel people who have been granted Czech citizenship. This means that until sufficient evidence against the alleged perpetrators is gathered, they can remain in the Czech Republic. Mr. Kundra is reluctant to reveal his sources, and Czech intelligence has refused to comment on the findings. However, the question of how Russian citizens gain Czech citizenship is set to be brought up at the next meeting of the Government Council for National Minorities.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Czech travel agencies have noted a steady rise in clients over the age of 60, reflecting increased spending power among seniors looking to enjoy, in many cases, a long overdue foreign holiday. With the population rapidly aging, this demographic will be an ever greater part of agencies' clientele, and a demanding one at that. Brian Kennedy has more.
The generation just now entering retirement age grew up during the so-called normalization period of communism, when foreign travel was both a privilege and a luxury, even within the Eastern Bloc. Many are now looking to make up for lost time. On average, they also have more money to explore the world with than previous generations of retirees did. Jan Bezdjek, head of marketing at the Fisher Travel Agency, says most seniors are looking to experience as much as they can of the local culture and sights while abroad.
When booking a trip, seniors tend to ask directly about a range of possibilities in the area, for example, about what day trips are available. They don't want to just sit on the beach or in a hotel resort all week. So in this respect, this group of clients actually take more active holidays than do families with children or young couples.
According to the latest OECD economic survey, the Czech Republic is among the fastest aging countries in Europe, with the ratio of retirees to workers set to rise from 28% in 2016 to a peak of 56% in the year 2058. As such, seniors are travel agencies' fastest growing clientele. About one in five new clients is a retired person. Seniors tend to be more demanding clients in terms of wanting extras beyond just booking a room, so says Petr Kostka, business director at Exim Tours. Many expect such evening programs and day trips to be included in a holiday package, but they also spend more on average than do young families or couples. Czech retirees also tend to travel outside the peak season, especially in the late spring, early summer, and early autumn, both to avoid crowds and take advantage of special offers, says Mr. Koska.
Seniors
mainly look for off-season offers. The resorts are not crowded and there are few people on the beaches. And mainly there are excellent offers at those times. Seniors also look for the benefits such as discounted rooms and free excursions. In the off-season, many hotels and resorts also organize special programs for seniors.
According to the Czech Association of Travel Agents, retirees are holidaying outside of Europe more often, with Asian destinations such as Thailand and cities in the Middle East increasingly popular. But nostalgia for childhoods spent in the countryside is also drawing older Czech tourists to rent cottages, both at home and in the neighboring Alps of Austria.
Brian Kennedy with that report. And now I'm joined in the studio by Ian Willoughby, who's got the summary of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin today with football, and after last week sensationally knocking five times winners Sevilla out of the Europa League and drawing Chelsea in the quarterfinals, Slavia Prague have now come even closer to lifting the Czech league title for the second time in 3 years. When second placed Viktoria Pilsen suffered a 2-1 defeat at Teplice on Friday, the Prague side didn't hesitate, overcoming Příbram 2-0 to give themselves a massive 9-point lead with a mere 5 rounds to go. Slavia manager Jindřich Trpišovský welcomed Sunday's victory, though he said his charges were a little off the pace.
It reminded me of a warm-up game in January during the winter break, when the players train non-stop and have had enough. If I were to sum up the game, I'm pleased that we grabbed the points, that we handled the situation and didn't hesitate.
That result was the last straw for the bosses at Příbram, who have since fired Josef Caplar as coach. Meanwhile, Viktoria Pilsen aren't only in danger of failing to retain the league title. If their recent downturn continues, they could be passed out in second place by a resurgent Sparta Prague, who thumped the West Bohemians 4-0 last weekend. Sparta came from behind to beat Olomouc 2-1 on Sunday and are now only 5 points behind Pilsen. Snowboarder Eva Samková can look back on her 2018-2019 season with satisfaction. The Czech took gold in snowboard cross at the World Championships in Utah last month and has just come first overall in the World Cup, thanks to victory at Vesona in Switzerland at the weekend. However, her coach, Marek Jelinek, says he's already looking forward to next season, when Samková will have a little time to focus on making improvements.
It'll be training for the following season. It is, after all, only a World Cup season. For us, the World Championships are more important, in part because of financing. And after that, we will have the Olympics. So next year, we will try out new snowboards and some new techniques to make sure that the world doesn't leave us behind.
Finally, tennis, and Petra Kvitova has again climbed to second in the world rankings, equaling her best-ever position. The Czech leapfrogged Romania's Simona Halep, despite being knocked out in the second round in Indian Wells last week. Her compatriot, Karolina Plíšková, fell 2 places to 7th. And that's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Josef Balázs is a leading member of New York's Czech community. He also has some fascinating personal and professional stories, which he shares with Ian Willoughby in this edition of One on One.
Josef Balázs is president of the Bohemian Benevolent and Literary Association, which brings together the leading Czech organizations in New York. But Balázs's main activity is running a successful construction firm that brings him into contact with global celebrities and the cream of Manhattan society. Not bad for a student from Prague's Žižkov, who escaped from communist Czechoslovakia with little more than the clothes on his back. The man born Josef Balázs spoke to me at the splendid Bohemian National Hall, the completion of whose renovation he personally oversaw.
I was born in Prague, specifically Prague 3 Žižkov, so it's more important than just being from Prague. Obviously, everybody knows that, especially people from Žižkov. My mom worked for this state factory that manufactured paint called Barvilaki. She was running the department that expedited all the paint. And my father, who actually died, you know, a long time ago, worked for the Czech railways.
But also, I was reading he was in the uranium mines.
That's correct. He was about 12 years older than my mom. He actually, when he was about 17, 18, he escaped after the war to Vienna, where he went to Vienna. And when he came back, he was imprisoned by the communists, and he spent roughly 70 years in the uranium mines, got out, met my mom, I was born, and then he started falling apart and then died.
As a consequence, very likely, of what he'd experienced in Yakimov.
It's basically the exposure to the radiation that I understand caused that.
What was Žižkov like when you were growing up in the 60s and 70s?
It was the equivalent of the Bronx in New York City. No, I mean, Žižkov was fun. I mean, obviously, it has this colorful history, and we used to joke as kids that because we are from Žižkov, we're better than those people from Karlin and other parts of the town. It's just, you know, fun.
You studied civil engineering in Prague. If you had stayed in Prague, what kind of career path would have been in front of you? What could you have done?
Seriously, I have absolutely no idea. Probably I would have ended up working for some sort of a large state construction company, and probably I would have stayed in that particular field.
Like many people from Czechoslovakia under communism, if they wanted to see the world, they basically had to escape, as you did. How did you get out?
It was actually very interesting, because once I discovered that this student travel agency was still offering a trip, skiing trip, for university students to Austria, to Schladming. So I just picked up a couple of applications, and then on my behalf and on behalf of my very dear friend Michael Richter, we actually filled these things out, and we actually had to get, if I remember correctly, roughly 12 approvals from different entities, police, military, because at the time, as a university student, I studied how to build bridges, but the soldiers taught us how to blow them up, so I was part of that military whatever. But because we just went to these offices, entities directly, and we basically told them that you know, other people recommended us for the trip, and we persuaded the first couple of them to give us the approval. So then it was very easy to collect additional stamps, you know, the other stamps.
When you got out, you basically ran away from the tour group, or what did you do?
The bus load comprised of roughly 48 kids, and later on we learned that approximately 19 stayed. So we actually, with my friend Michal, we stayed for a couple of days, we skied, and then we ended up in the outskirts of Salzburg, met some young people there, stayed with one family, and then the father of one of these kids was a professor at the university in Salzburg, and he found out that if we applied for the actual asylum in Austria, that we would have to go to this camp, a refugee camp near Vienna, Treiskirchen, and we would have stayed there probably for 2 years. So he recommended that we should apply for the asylum in Germany, in Bonn.
Most people who defected from Czechoslovakia probably gained a lot, but they also lost something. They lost contact with their family, with their friends. What was your motivation in leaving your home country?
In general, I think I always wanted to see the world, and I did feel, obviously, enclosed in Prague, but on one hand, I didn't suffer. I mean, you know, my mom was looking after me. I didn't work. I went to school. I was enjoying my life, but I really wanted to get out. For me, the most difficult part was to actually make sure I would not be sad that I left. So I had to kind of, mentally readjust or reset myself so I would not be sad that I left. I miss people or I miss my land.
You first lived in Canada, then moved here to New York. What was it about New York that drew you?
When I first visited New York City, it was actually during the summer. And it was weird because the city at that time was kind of really dingy.
What year was that?
First time I came here was probably 1984. And, I didn't like it at first. I actually then was just gently intrigued. Went back to Montreal. At the time, I was living in Montreal most of the time. I must say, it probably took several visits where I started kind of discovering that the city is absolutely fabulous, and then it just drew me in.
Did your training in Prague prepare you well for working in the construction industry in New York?
I would say on a technical level, yes, absolutely. I mean, without doubt, I would say that the education I received was definitely top-notch. I mean, the technical part. Otherwise, you just try your best, and at some point you cannot be shy, and you have to take risks and kind of use a little bit of BS to say something. just to be able to get the first gig,
And how did you establish yourself here?
First, I worked for a large developer downtown. When I was responsible for, a little crew of people kind of managing little projects, then I figured maybe I could do it on my own. And then with a friend of mine, Yuri Kalista, who happened to be living in New York already, he actually came 2 years earlier than me. And we realized that we went to the same school of technology. Then we sort of established our first little company and then started working on first little projects.
And was it good timing to be here in New York, at the end of the 80s, when the city was slowly improving and getting out of the period where it was kind of a slum, or at least some parts were?
Yes, I mean, I would say the whole thing goes in waves, and probably we actually caught one of these kind of upward moving economical kind of expansion. So it was good. It was fairly easy to get projects. Obviously, we worked our butts off to make sure that everything was done on time and beautifully, etc. So we were not really generating much profit because we just wanted to do things properly and then establish kind of a good record.
Your company doesn't advertise, you don't reveal the names of your clients because they're so high-end or upscale. What's the secret to working in that kind of environment with, really upscale clients?
When I established my own company in, 96, something like that, I worked for a couple of unique clients, and those recommended me. And then later, when we worked for this recording studio called the Hit Factory, and we were exposed to all these musical stars, etc., and eventually ended up with some projects for people in this type of an industry and Hollywood industry, etc. When we had to sign fairly strict non-disclosure agreements, I realized that we could turn it into our advantage and work with it. And then we obviously worked for some people that, they're described as the old money of New York or these captains of the industry and then Wall Street titans, etc. And those families also like to keep their private life very, very private. So we cannot say where these people live. Obviously, we cannot show photographs, drawings, etc.
Can you tell us anything about the renovation of the Hit Factory, the famous music studio?
I mean, the Hit Factory, yes. I mean, it was a commercial venue. It doesn't exist anymore, by the way, because there is now this massive high-rise. So, it was very interesting, not only from the point of working along these stars, etc., but technologically, obviously, because we were working with really probably the best acoustic architects and designers in the world, this group from London. And it was fascinating. I mean, the facility was huge. There were 12 recording spaces. the largest one could probably take up to 300 people there. So even the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, the entire thing would fit there. We were just rebuilding these constantly because, for instance, when Madonna was doing the Ray of Life album, then everything needed to sound a little bit metallic. So, you know, we were putting various insulation materials into the walls of it, and it was fun.
Did you meet Madonna?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, all of them. I mean, the thing was that once we were inside of the facility, none of our guys was obviously allowed to take a photograph or ask people for, you know, autograph, etc. So because they had to feel comfortable. But yeah, we saw them all the time. I mean, and they were very, very pleasant. I mean, I spoke with Bono many, many times, etc. One interesting aspect, when we are talking about this, that they were constantly kids outside of the studio just waiting for people to come in and out, and most of them, to my understanding, would sort of, you know, wave or sign photographs. But only Michael Jackson would drive his limousine into the freight elevator of the facility and then would be taken down into the basement to get out. So he was the only one I remember would never want to get out.
Without naming names, I guess a lot of rock stars invest in property, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And not only them. All the smart people in the world of entertainment or sport, if they generate these huge portfolios of things, that, yeah, they do.
You also have a pilot's license. What kind of flying do you do?
My big passion, yeah. I mean, I don't fly that often, but I used to be a member of this flying club here at Teterboro, which is the closest really decent airport to the city. And I used to fly Cessnas and Piper Cherokees and Archers. And yeah, I love that.
I guess it's fair to say you have lived, or you are living, the American dream.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes when you have problems, it's gently nightmarish. But no, I'm just kidding. Absolutely, yes, indeed. I am living my American dream. And I'm also very, very happy that I can participate in this Bohemian National Hall thing, etc. So that makes me also very, very happy.
Joseph Balázs, who was speaking to Ian Willoughby at the Bohemian National Hall in New York. And you can find many more interviews Ian recorded in the city on our website. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.